Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
We're taking your sources, digging in, and pulling out what matters most, specifically for you folks in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, Texas.
Yeah, and today we're tackling something pretty fundamental, the whole dynamic of cities and communities.
Exactly. We're drawing on a discussion from the Dole Institute of Politics. It featured Patrick Tuohy from the Better Cities Project and the demographer Wendell Cox. Really interesting stuff.
And it hits on that paradox, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We hear so much national politics nonstop.
All the time.
But, when you really think about it, it's the local stuff, the decisions made right here in Southeast Houston that, well, they hit closest to home, affects our daily lives directly.
That's precisely why we wanted to do this deep dive for you. Our communities, Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, the whole area, we're seeing real changes.
Shifts in population, economic stuff, the aftermath of the pandemic.
Right. And it makes you ask, okay, what is a city today? Really, how are things changing? And what does it mean for, policy and planning right here?
Which is exactly what Wendell Cox got into. So maybe start with the basics. Like, what even is a city? It sounds simple, but
It's actually not, is it? You've got Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, the political lines on a map, the municipality.
right. But then there's the economic reality. For us, that's the big Houston metro area. That's the real job market, the economic engine,
And there's a third way to look at it too, isn't there? The actual built-up area.
We got a physical urban footprint. And get this, the average major U.S. metro area has something like 127 separate cities within it, politically, I mean.
Wow, 127. That's a lot of mayors.
It is. It highlights that fragmentation.
Now, one thing that really stood out in the discussion was about density, population density. It seems like we hear comparisons all the time that might be, well, kind of misleading.
Oh, absolutely. This is super important for understanding our region, actually. People will compare the density of a whole metropolitan area, I mean, Harris County, plus all the surrounding counties, including tons of rural land.
Right, farms, open space.
Exactly. They'll compare that to, say, Manhattan, which is, just absurd.
It's apples and oranges.
Completely. The
Yeah.
only way density makes sense is if you're looking at the urban area density, the actual built-up parts. And it's kind of mind-blowing, but about 80% of the land inside major U.S. metros is still technically rural.
80%, even in places we think of as sprawling.
Even here in the Houston metro, loads of open space still. It kind of challenges that whole narrative of just endless sprawl eating everything. Maybe we need to think more about how we develop within the areas we already have.
That really changes the perspective. So, okay, we have our local cities, Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, existing within this bigger Houston economic zone. How do they interact? Is it all cooperation or is there competition too?
It's definitely both. You need cooperation, right, for the whole region to work. Regional planning tries to help with that.
Makes sense.
But yeah, absolutely. These cities are also competing for businesses, for tax dollars.
Trying to attract investment.
Exactly. And here's something interesting for, local leaders to maybe chew on. Offering tax breaks, those kinds of incentives, might look like a win for one specific city if they land a company.
Right, they get the ribbon cutting.
But looking at the whole Houston metro, those subsidies often don't really create new jobs overall. It's more like shuffling jobs from one spot to another within the region.
Huh. So it helps one town, maybe, but not necessarily the bigger picture.
Often, yeah. Something to keep in mind.
Definitely. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Where are people actually living? The discussion talked about suburbanization. That's been the story for a long time in the U.S., hasn't it? Since World War II,
Oh,
really.
massively. Huge shift out of central cities into the suburbs. And the numbers are pretty stark. Something like 85% of people in major U.S. metros live in suburban areas now.
85%.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's different from maybe some old European city models where the wealthy stayed in the core. But interestingly, even that's changing. Suburbanization is global now. You see it around London, Paris.
So it's not just an American thing anymore.
Not really, no. It's a broader trend.
And what about more recently? Within the US, are we seeing specific migration patterns, people moving between states?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
There's a clear trend, people moving out of high-cost states like California and New York,
And moving towards.
places like Texas, Tennessee,
Right.
states often seen as having a lower cost of living, maybe different
Yeah.
tax structures, that kind of thing.
We certainly see that influx here.
Right. And it's not just like the super rich leaving California, despite what some might say. California actually had a net loss of population recently, more people leaving than arriving overall.
So state-level policies on things like cost of living really do trickle down and affect where people end up, even impacting us locally here.
Absolutely. It has real consequences for communities.
The last few years obviously have been unusual. How did the pandemic potentially shake things up for cities and communities?
Well, it seems to have accelerated some trends that were already bubbling up. Remote work is the big one, obviously.
Huge shift.
And that could definitely push more people out from dense city centers. If you can work from anywhere, maybe you want more space, right? A bigger place in the suburbs, or even further out. Lower costs, maybe.
More flexibility.
Exactly. And you see the impact in things like public transit ridership. It dropped significantly in many big cities. People just weren't commuting downtown the same way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that must have financial implications for those transit systems, too.
Big time. It raises questions about their long-term funding and service levels.
So this brings up the challenge for the older, sort of core cities. How do they compete now with suburbs, especially if remote work continues to be a big factor?
It's tough. Maintaining the tax base, providing services, it's a real balancing act. And here's something counterintuitive that came up. Sometimes smaller towns or jurisdictions can actually provide services at a lower cost per person than big, dense cities.
Really? How
Now,
does that work? You'd think density would make things cheaper per capita.
not always. Factors like labor costs, pension obligations for city workers, those can be higher in the big established cities. So density doesn't automatically mean cheaper services.
Interesting. Okay, let's talk transportation a bit more. Public transit, you mentioned the ridership drop. How widespread is transit use generally in the US?
Well, outside of a few very large, dense cities like New York, it's actually pretty limited. Nationally, only about 5% of work trips happen on public transit.
Only 5%.
Yeah, it's heavily concentrated in just a few places. So for most of the country, including our area, outside maybe downtown Houston, it's a smaller piece of the puzzle. And again, remote work throws another question mark over its future role.
And what about policies that directly shape our communities, land use rules?
Super critical. Things like urban containment policies, basically drawing a line on the map and saying no development beyond this point.
Like a green belt.
Sorta, yeah.
Yeah.
But those policies can really restrict the supply of land for building, which
Just
naturally.
drives up housing costs.
Exactly. California is the classic example. Housing affordability is just fundamental. It shapes where people can afford to live, whether businesses can attract workers. It affects a whole region's competitiveness. If it's too expensive, people will look elsewhere, like Texas.
Right. Which brings us back to that migration pattern. Now, there's always the argument about sprawl, right? That building outwards is inefficient, costs too much for roads, sewers. What was Cox's take on that?
His point was more focused on, well, where are people actually choosing to live? Despite the critiques of sprawl, the data shows overwhelming growth is still happening in the suburbs.
Still the preferred option for many.
Seems that way. Over 90% of population growth in the top 50 metros over the last decade was suburban growth. So people are still voting with their feet, suggesting that lifestyle remains very desirable for a lot of families.
Okay, looking ahead maybe a bit further, self-driving cars, science fiction still, maybe? Or could they actually change things?
Yeah, feels a bit sci-fi, but it's worth thinking about. There's speculation, of course. One potential positive could be access. Maybe autonomous vehicles could help lower-income folks get to jobs in suburban areas more easily, areas maybe not well served by transit.
Improve mobility for some.
Potentially.
Yeah.
But, there's still a lot of skepticism about whether we'll really see widespread fleets of autonomous ride-sharing replacing personal cars anytime soon. Lots of hurdles still.
Fair enough. So let's bring it all home. For our listeners, for policymakers, right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, what are the practical takeaways? What should local leaders be focusing on given all these trends?
Well, it seems to circle back to competitiveness, keeping the local government running efficiently, trying to keep taxes reasonable.
Good school.
Absolutely crucial. Improving education and just being realistic about transportation and land use, understanding how things are changing, and probably not pinning hopes on giant subsidies for things like sports stadiums is the main way to grow the local economy.
Focus on the fundamentals.
Seems to be the message.
And it's interesting to hear this isn't just a US phenomenon. These kinds of shifts are happening elsewhere too.
Yeah, definitely. Suburbanization, the focus on housing affordability, debates about density. You see similar conversations and trends in many other developed countries. It suggests these are pretty deep-seated shifts in how modern societies organize themselves.
It really underscores how complex all this is, doesn't it? City and community dynamics, they're constantly evolving, especially now.
And for everyone listening, Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, you're living these trends. You see them playing out.
Yeah, think about how these big forces, housing costs, where jobs are, remote work, might be shaping your own street, your own neighborhood.
It makes you consider that balance, right? Between
Yeah.
our local identity, our pride in our town, and the reality that we're all part of this bigger Southeast Houston region, interconnected.
And how our individual actions, our engagement can actually add up and make a difference for the whole area. Which really begs the question for all of us, how do we contribute? How do we help our communities thrive through these changes?
Exactly. And that's the whole point of this show, isn't it? Trying to empower you, the residents right here, with information you can actually use to make a positive local impact.
And if you do find value in these deep dives, if this helps you think about our local communities, please consider supporting the show. You can visit thinkandactlocally.com/donate. We've got the link right there in the show notes.
So maybe a final thought to leave people with. Considering everything we've talked about today, the shifts, the trends, remote work, all of it, what's the one key area where you think local action, right here in your part of Southeast Houston, could make the biggest difference for the future? Something to chew on.